Bradley, Bishop O'Reilly, Sister Elizabeth, Monsignor Jim, Deputy Quinn, and ladies and gentlemen, thank you for taking the time in your very busy lives to be with us here this morning. It's not easy to do so. And thank you for coming along to what is, for Catholic schools, an important occasion as Catholic Schools Week begins this coming weekend. I want to say a few words to you, obviously, about the Catholic Schools Partnership that we launched today. And it's an important moment in the history of schooling in Ireland. Obviously, we're at a point, everyone is well aware, of the huge changes in Irish society, and particularly issues facing the Church. And all of that feeds into the realities that we're facing at this time. And nothing, as you know, particularly all of you here present know very well, there is nothing more important in life in any society, think of any country throughout the world, rich or poor, advanced, industrial, or very backward in terms of development, where schooling does not matter. Schooling is at the very centre of life. That's why every state, quite rightly so, is so interested in all the issues revolving around schooling. There is no example, as societies have developed over the last several hundred years, where societies have grown less interested in schools. The issues concerning schools concern everyone. They involve all aspects of society. And churches and religious groups are naturally also very centrally involved, not least because of their commitment of handing on tradition from one generation to the next. Catholic schools in Ireland make an enormous contribution to our society. And they are, I think it's very important to say, models of inclusivity and care for all the students who attend them. This dynamic role of Catholic schools will continue into the future and will be enhanced, we hope, by the structure we are launching today, which will provide a new level of partnership between all those involved in Catholic schools. There are about, in the Republic of Ireland, just leaving the North aside for a moment, though in many respects Catholic education is properly understood as an all-island issue. In the South, in the Republic, this jurisdiction, there are about 3,500 Catholic schools. They are doing outstanding work. They serve very diverse communities, from tiny rural hamlets that will be looked upon internationally, to vast urban sprawls. There is an extraordinary diversity and dynamic present in these schools. They carry very diverse charisms. Some of them are part of very different traditions. Even if you think of two religious congregations that you know, there can be quite different elements of and sensitivities when it comes to their understanding of education. That diversity is a contribution to Irish society. It's a value that should be cherished. And the partnership that we set up today is deliberately called a partnership. It's an umbrella association. It is not intent and will not do that which is best done locally on the ground. It hopes to provide an umbrella, might be a good metaphor, where people can come together to reflect on certain issues and to work together on some core concerns. Only this week I was at a retreat, actually, I was giving a retreat to priests in the Diocese of Killaloe, and I asked them very carefully, and just people don't realise this, there's a dynamic and diverse conversation underway within the Church as regards the Church's role in education. And that conversation, that internal church dialogue, as well as the dialogue with all other partners, is to be welcomed. But the most interesting thing that several of the priests said to me is we totally underestimate the level of volunteerism that is clearly evident in all of our schools. One described endless hours taken up by a board of management planning for a new school. And he was just calculating in his mind, what would this in reality cost? All of these people gave up their time freely. All of them came to endless meetings. And as you can imagine, with all of them at their own jobs, they took on board a lot of extra hassle that they could do without. But they did so not for any reward, not because they wanted to get something out of it, because they're not going to get anything particularly personally. Many of them probably have grown up children. But they did so out of pure dedication to the future of education. And we need to cherish that level of volunteerism. It's a very notable aspect of our whole schooling structure. Remember, there are about, close on, 20,000 volunteers on boards of management at primary level, and a further major group again at second level. Where, I would ask you, and this is not a criticism, it's only a question, where is the equivalent in other aspects of Irish society? Where is it in health, if I could dare to mention it? Where is it, for instance, in a very important area, if you think about it, what could be more important locally? Where is it in policing? Where is it, for heaven's sake, in local government of all things? We have an extraordinary system of volunteerism when it comes to boards of management in schools. You can criticise boards all you want. You can make any criticism of any local board that you know about. But the reality is, if you looked in from another country, into a small country like this, with an extraordinary scattered population pattern, and having 3,000 primary schools, 1,500 of which have less than 100 pupils each. Listen to that again. Of 3,000 schools, 1,500 have less than 100 pupils. Yet they live and thrive in their own way, serving local communities. Our national schools, scattered as they are, and there is an issue maybe about some of them being too small, we all acknowledge that, and that needs to be addressed by all the partners in time to come. But think of any small locality you know. The identity between the people and their school is incredible. It's a very rich, local, sensitive issue, and it's one that needs to be respected into the future. Today, as I said, we launched an umbrella group. Thus far, we're only constituted really by a council, but it's a very important council, and it's enormous. It's made up of 33 people, many of whom are here today, and I welcome you. The reason why the council is so big, and properly so, is because we want to bring together a very diverse range of voices from Catholic education, from managers and governors and patrons, to teachers and principals and members of boards and so on. And of course, not least, the group that can often be left to one side in all of this, and very wrongly so, that is parents themselves. There are on the council 3 bishops, 7 lay women, 8 lay men, 6 religious sisters, 2 religious brothers, and 7 priests. And therefore they're a good representative body of the whole nature of Irish Catholic education. A couple of things that we intend in that group is first of all to emphasise the word partnership. This is going to be a partnership where people will work together to bring about the best that we can for the future of all education in Ireland, and not least for Catholic schools. Very importantly, we are following a key important principle in Catholic social teaching, and that is the principle of subsidiarity, the most misunderstood term in the English language, I would suggest to you. Most people equate subsidiarity in their minds with decentralisation or delegation. In other words, authority, quite understandably in a lot of contexts, is held at the centre, and then the centre, the core, decides to decentralise, to give some of that power, that authority over issues to the local. Subsidiarity, remember, is the opposite. It is that the local is at the centre of things. The local is what matters. But there are certain things that the local cannot do for itself, and therefore it needs to hand over some of its sovereignty to the centre, and the centre might do it better. Subsidiarity is not about the centre giving authority to the local. It's about the local handing over some of its authority to the centre. Our schools, all of our education structure, is radically localised. It is diversified, and it is localised in all sorts of ways, and we want to continue that, and we want to respect that level of subsidiarity. And what we are planning is that there are certain issues that we will address at a central level that would be better addressed in that way rather than at the local level. But remember, in all of this, what matters are real schools, real teachers, real pupils, real parents who are living in schools that will continue, we hope, to offer a diverse range of educational provision across the country. There are 5 issues that I'd like to draw to your attention that I think will be important in the work of the partnership as a more centralised body. And the first of those is, of course, the issue of school provision into the future, which is a major issue in newspapers and various political and church conversations at the moment. The basic principle in this regard, and I'm glad to see that so many very serious commentators, political and ecclesial, are making this point, and that is the key issue, is parental choice. The role of parents is key to education, and is particularly key in the Irish context, given our history and given the statements and what is held in our own constitution. That is not true in some states. In some states, acts of parliament dictate everything about education, and parents simply have to follow. In our tradition, parents are at the centre of the story, and they must continue to be so. Everyone agrees, and there is no question about this, that there needs to be some change, of course, at primary level. There are too many Catholic schools for the number of Catholics in our state, and also there are some people, Catholics and others, who would prefer and who would welcome a broader range of diversity of provision. That is, Deputy Quinn said during the week, and as Bishop O'Reilly has said on several occasions, and several other church leaders as well, needs to be planned carefully. The two key criteria are the role and choice of parents and careful local planning. This all needs to be done locally, it needs to be reflected on carefully, and then change can be take place in a coherent fashion, protecting the rights of parents, teachers, and all the partners in education. I would suggest to those, by the way, who wish to bring about the change, and maybe some who would almost like to see the back of the church, so to speak, in education, which is not going to happen. The church sees as a central part of its mission, its role in education in all sorts of ways. But those who wish to bring about change should actually, I think, talk in a particular way. They shouldn't criticise existing schools as if the Catholic schools and Catholic involvement were a big problem. The Irish schooling division at the moment is notable for its excellence in all sorts of ways, and not least that it be brought about by extraordinary levels of contribution from various people representing the church. To bring about change, one should not attack that which is currently provided. Those who are serious about change, and I know many political and other leaders are, and want to be seriously involved, should know the great provision that's guaranteed at the moment, and should actually work with us to provide new avenues into the future. The Catholic Schools Partnership would welcome working with all other partners internally and externally in providing for the educational needs into the future, particularly taking the issue of parental choice into account. Secondly, and it's linked to that, I'd like to say a word to you about second level. Everyone at the moment is talking about primary, but there is a second level education system as well. And that second level, there is diversity of choice on a major scale already in our state in the south. And that needs to continue, obviously, into the future. But we also need to see new Catholic voluntary secondary schools. There have been none now for almost several decades. And in fact, those who tell us that they are very interested in parental choice, and I hope everybody is, also need to take account of parental choice at second level. And surely if one took due regard to parental choice at second level, there would be diversity of provision of new schools. They would not be all the same. In fact, you could end up with the ironic situation that just as we moved to make sure that there would be diversity of choice at primary level, and we would all welcome more choice there, that we would actually begin to close down choice at second level. There needs to be competition in the best sense of educational competition, and there needs to be provision for a parental choice at second level, and hopefully state and church and others will work towards that into the future. Thirdly, and again I think most people acknowledge this, there is an issue that needs to be addressed about the unsustainability of some of our small schools. Some of our schools are extraordinarily small by international standards, and there are a very significant number of them. We all know why they exist. I come from such a community myself, and they exist and have provided marvellous education over a couple of hundred years in many cases to very small, scattered rural communities. But just as the church internally has to face, for instance, the issue of how to continue small churches, small buildings, serving very, very small, rural, scattered communities, so too we have to seriously look at the unsustainability of some small schools on educational and other grounds. Again, this is a matter of partnership. Everyone needs to work together, but clearly it's an issue that needs over time to be addressed. Fourthly, the partnership would like to provide support for teachers, members of boards of management, for all those involved in Catholic schools. We want our Catholic schools into the future to be dynamic Catholic schools with a true sense of their Catholic identity, while also providing a very important civic function in service of society at large. Our Catholic schools here in Ireland and abroad are absolutely dedicated to the service of the state, to the service of the civic community, to handing on the values and the traditions of the state and the society. But they want to do that also in dialogue and in the spirit of Christ himself, true to Christian tradition and true to the nationality and the values of the state they belong to. There is no contradiction in being a true citizen and a true Catholic, and many of the people who have been leaders in our schools over the years have been outstanding examples both of good citizenship and of good members of the Church. There need be no contradiction. The good citizen and the good member of the Church can be one and the same person. In that regard, remember, internationally, Catholic schools are very notable. Catholic schooling is very popular throughout the world, and therefore as we face a period of change in our own country, we should continue to be aware of that. But we do, not least in the role that I've taken on and in the partnership that we're working on, need to provide support, not least in the changing culture, for those who find themselves at the coalface of change in schools in our time. And fifthly, there needs, I think, and I hope the partnership can facilitate this, there needs also to be an internal church discussion. The Irish Church is at a key moment in its history. There are oftentimes key moments, but this is obviously one as well. And the Church has many things to address, not just the issues that dominate the Church leadership's lives at the moment. There are all sorts of issues. In fact, the biggest issue of all is the issue of the relationship of faith and culture. And as cultural change manifests itself through growing secularization, how a church community lives and breathes in that environment. But we need internally in the church, between people who are committed to the church in various ways, to have a serious dialogue about our role in education, where we see ourselves in the future, how much energy do we have for it, and how do we provide for lay leadership as religious become fewer and fewer on the ground. One of the great issues that's obviously occurring in our church locally in Ireland is the emergence of lay leadership in all sorts of areas. And we can look forward, thankfully, to very strong lay leadership of our schools into the future. But we need a conversation as to how to facilitate that and to what extent the church should be involved in education in various guises well into the future years. Those are therefore some of the themes that we will be looking at in the Catholic Schools Partnership. Over time, we hope that that dialogue will include many people. But remember, at the very centre of things remains teachers, pupils and parents. And just maybe as I come to conclude, I'd like you to think particularly about the role of teachers. Teaching is the most noble of all professions. Teachers are much maligned in media because they're an easy target, because they've long holidays and people perceive them with shorter working days and so on. But anyone who has ever taught, anyone who has ever stood in the classroom, knows that you put yourself very much at the beck and call of others. You expose yourself in a very definite way. Teaching is the most demanding of professions and the most rewarding. Christ was a great teacher. He was called a rabbi. That's what he was, a teacher. Not a teacher in our modern school sense, because they didn't have that back then, but a teacher true and true, one who met people and in the true sense of education, educare, called people to move from where they are to somewhere else, to move from whatever context they found themselves, to move on another stage of the step of life. The greatest story, one of the greatest stories that Jesus told in his parables, is the story of a sower going out to sow seed. It's one of the most powerful parables in all of the Gospels. It was the reading coincidentally at Mass, daily Mass yesterday. And the sower going out to sow seed, we generally tend to read that parable morally. You know the story that you saw some seed falls in a path and it withers away, some falls and falls amongst thorns and gets choked, some falls and some seed fall in a drain and they get drowned, and some seed fall in rich soil and bear a harvest of 30, 60, even 100-fold. We are inclined to think, and I always say this to teachers, we're inclined to interpret that parable morally, that there are people, we all know thorny people, us and I have met plenty of them, we all know people who we think are about as deep as the soil on a pathway, we all know people whose water is as deep as what you find in a drain, and we all know people like myself who have rich soil, 30, 60 and even 100-fold. If you interpret the gospel that way, all it's doing is confirming all of your own cosy certainties about yourself and about others. But the gospel never does that. The gospel is not a confirmation of our values and our ideas. It's an endless story of subversion, always challenging and disturbing our latest certainty, whatever it might be. The parable of the sower going to sow seed has nothing to do with human morality at all. It has to do with God's word. God's word has been sown in the heart of every single person in the world, believer and unbeliever alike. And that word will bear fruit, not necessarily in the places we think. It might be choked by thorns, it might have no depth of soil on a pathway, but in all sorts of ways, if you look across and you have the life and you have the eyes to see, you will see that God's word is bearing fruit in all sorts of ways. Teachers need to be aware more than anybody else, particularly first and second level teachers, that the seeds that they have sown through all the work that they have done with pupils bear fruit into the future in a way that they could never even imagine. I spent most of my life involved in teacher training, in the preparation of teachers, in going out to second level schools. And years ago, we used to interview all these pupils, students coming in for the Leaving Cert before they came into third level. You know, one of the interesting things about the interviews, I'm sure I interviewed, God helped me for my sins, maybe up to 4,000 or 5,000 18-year-olds asking them why they wanted to be teachers. The interesting thing was that not one of them, in fact, not a single person I think I've ever met in life, I've never met a youngster coming into third level who couldn't identify at least one teacher who had had an impact on them. In other words, teachers have had an impact on people's lives in a way that goes well beyond what they often imagine themselves. We need to confirm them, we need to affirm them, we need to support them in all sorts of ways, because if you know anything about changing culture and the impact it has in the classroom and on disciplinary behaviour, then you would know that teaching is the most difficult of all tasks, while it remains one of the most noble. Finally today, as Jim mentioned earlier, we celebrate the feast day, the memory liturgically today, of Thomas Aquinas. It's a very apt day that we gather on, because Thomas Aquinas is a most notable figure, arguably the greatest educator that ever lived, certainly one of the greatest minds in Christian history, a man extraordinary in all sorts of ways, even though he died at only 49 years of age. Aquinas wrote before there was books, so everything was originally done by scroll. He wrote voluminous amounts, but he has two lessons. The reason why he stands out, plenty of other people wrote plenty too, obviously. The reason why Aquinas stands out head and shoulders almost above any other figure in Christian history, apart from Jesus and Paul themselves and maybe St. Augustine, Aquinas stands with them as one of the great figures of history. And why does he do so? What is it about him that makes him stand out so much? He lived in the 1200s, from 1225 to 1274. So why is it from that 13th century that that figure has had such an impact? The reason was because he lived in a time of extraordinary change and he adapted to it. He is the outstanding example of a man who brought faith and culture together. He lived in a period when Aristotle, who had been lost to Western civilization, had been found again. In other words, the texts of Aristotle were rediscovered and people began to read them. And many people saw in Aristotle's pagan pre-Christian texts a huge threat to Christian civilization. Here was new pagan thinking, nothing to do with Christianity, but wonderful thinking. Anyone could see that this was reason of a high level. And Aquinas, in his own mind and in his work and in his dialogue with others, managed to bring these two traditions together, Christianity and this Greek philosophy, and he created a new synthesis, as we would see it later. In other words, he was a person who lived in an extraordinary time of change, but managed to bring faith and culture into a new dynamic conversation. Could be any better example for us who live in this 21st century. And further, the other thing he did, which is very instructive for Catholic educators down through history, is he had the most extraordinary respect for faith and reason, that the two can live together. They are by no means the same thing, but faith and reason are not necessarily at all contradictory. In fact, one can, in a very valuable way, interrogate the other. And notice we do that in our Catholic schools all the time. Think of any second level school right now. Let's say the bell has just gone for class. People might be leaving the physics laboratory and they go down the street, down the corridor, and into a civics class. They might leave there and go down into religious education class. They go from there to geography, to music, and to wherever. These are not small, isolated things that have nothing to do with each other. All of these realities can deeply inform one another in a rich curriculum, and faith and reason can interrogate one another, question one another, of course contradict one another, and yet the reality is that in the life of the same person, person can grow in faith and can grow in reason. In the same way as the same person can be a good citizen and a good Christian, so too any academic, be they a young student in school or a senior academic in university, can be a person of the deepest respect for reason and rationality, and yet a person of the most intense and personal and sincere religious faith. Aquinas is a great example of all of these things. So as we celebrate his memory today, let's hope and indeed pray that in your life and mine, for those of us committed to the future of Catholic education, that faith and reason would not just be a dynamic in a university or a college, but that faith and reason would be a real conversation in your heart and mine. And maybe most importantly of all, may our church learn how to speak in this culture the word of God that has been handed on to us, so that it might be handed on through our schools, through our parishes, and through all the structures of our church. So thank you finally again for being with us today. We launched Catholic Schools Week, and I'm absolutely delighted that Cardinal Brady, of all people, will inaugurate Catholic Schools Partnership, because he's one of my educators. I was a student in the Irish College in Rome, and Father Brady, as he was at the time, was the Vice Rector. And few people would encapsulate in their own lives much of what we mean by a true sense of education as Father, now Cardinal Brady, would do. So I'm glad that he's here to hand on the candle to me today, and indeed to celebrate the significance of Catholic schooling. So thanks for your attention.